Okay, so good morning, everyone. We are going to, Emir Tzashem, conclude the Hakdama to Perek Shira today. Emir Tzashem tying out. So you probably were not able to sleep at all since our last class. I left you in the middle of that riveting story where Eliezer ben Hyrcanus ran away from home, much to his father's chagrin and dismay. His father essentially telling him, you're not going to really amount to anything significant, and therefore you're better off just devote yourself as a worker in the field, and that is all you need to do. Ultimately, again, Rabbi Eliezer, or I should say Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, decides to take leave of his father, goes to the Yeshiva Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It's quickly found out that not only does he not know Torah, but he doesn't know what? Anything. Pretty much a total ignoramus. Mamish, nothing. Not even davening, not benching, nothing. And for some strange reason, and I say strange reasons, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai takes an interest in this young man. Now maybe it's possible Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did this with everyone. Maybe it's possible that anyone he would have taken an interest in, or perhaps he saw some spark of greatness in this young man. Perhaps he saw some spark of greatness within this individual. And therefore he made a decision to take an active interest in him. He begins to teach him davening, Shema, Shmona Esrei, Birkas HaMazon. He even looks after the physical needs of Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, realizing that he's not eating properly. And this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We pick up now in source number 9. Source number 9, paragraph Tess. Behemshech HaDvar Mesupar. So remember again, time goes on. Young Eliezer ben Hyrcanus establishes himself as an incredible Talmud Chacham. Incredible diligence. And again, you know, this is one of these stories. This is one of these stories which I think we all find incredibly inspirational, right? Whose story does this sound a lot like? Whose story does this remind you of? Rabbi Akiva. Excellent, right? And again, you have a couple of stories. And the truth is, who else's story does this remind you of to a certain degree? I'm sorry? Rabbi Nassim Zifinkel, beautiful, more contemporary, beautiful. Also, like, even if you think about, even like a Moshe Rabbeinu, think about this, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, until the age that he's 80, really doesn't have that much connection with Klal Yisrael. I'm sorry? Ah, okay, so you know what goes, does somebody mind just shifting the iPad? Thank you. How did Rabbi Zin Rosenbaum have? Does she have it down there? Or does she speak from down here? Okay. Is that a little bit better? Okay, I'm sorry, thank you. So, you know, you see a lot of stories. I was in the Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, again, remember, he's raised in the house of Paro, pretty much then flees to Midian, minding his own business in Midian. Remember, again, even his relationship with Sipora, what Sipora believed initially, what Sipora didn't believe initially, but it's pretty incredible. And the Moshe Rabbeinu, so you see these great stories of people who really begin with nothing. Really, and even Moshe Rabbeinu, who was born into an incredibly righteous family, but is not raised by that family. You know, remember, as much as Yocheved was his wet nurse when he was a baby, Bipashtos, Moshe was not raised by his family, and nor does we have any reason to believe that he was all that influenced by his family. At the end of the day, Moshe Rabbeinu comes to this later on in life. He's chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the age of 80. So Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Nassim C. Finkel, Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, and I often find these stories very inspiring because a lot of times we think greatness is hereditary. So if your parents are great, then you could be great. If you have wonderful yichus in your mishpacha, then you could become great. You know, if you come from good lineage, good stock, now of course yichus is wonderful. And having great parents is fantastic. And having a wonderful and illustrious family tree is incredible. But at the end of the day, that doesn't make you or break you. That's something that contributes. If you have it, you're very fortunate. But if you don't have it, it does not in any way preclude you from becoming someone or something great. That's what these stories teach us. And that's why so many times it's not just enough to know what makes great people great. But it's not just enough to know what great people said. It's important to know their story so that you can understand. Actually, so you know, all of us have heard Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus before. We've all heard of him before. We've all seen that Mishnah Pirkei Avos that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai calls him the Bor Sud She'eno Ma'abed Tipa, right? The cemented cistern that doesn't lose a drop. But now you know his story. Now you know his story. Now you know where he came from. Not only did he not come from a chash of a family, but he came from a family which was hostile to his spiritual dreams and aspirations. He came from a family where his father told him, you're nothing. You are nothing. You're going to be a great farmer. You're going to be a great hired hand, but you're not going to amount in anything in Torah. That's the family he came from. So he continues his studies in the Yeshiva Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So what happens? Paragraph test. Behemshech hadvar mesupar. As the story goes on, it is told, ki bein sayim hisisu achei Eliezer esavim sheyaders Eliezer mikol mechasov. So you have to understand something. Eliezer ben Hyrcanus leaves home, and what does he tell his father when he leaves home? What does he tell his father? Nothing. He does not, from based on the story we saw, he doesn't tell his father. He picks up and he left. Now, this is also very interesting, just as an aside, by the way. Not our topic, but it's a fascinating discussion. Sometimes, when there are conflicts in Kibud Avvaim, the way to avoid doing something that is usur is avoidance. So sometimes, you know, it's a cloud gadol in life that generally avoidance is not a good approach to your problems. Most people like that approach. Most people favor that approach. Most people live life with that approach. Just avoid dealing with your problems. It almost never works, but sometimes it's the only viable option. So Eliezer ben Hyrcanus leaves home without saying a word to his father, not because he wants to disrespect his father, just the opposite. He doesn't want to get into conflict with his father. He doesn't want to get into a situation where he says, "Dad, I'm going." His father says, "No, you're not." And then he's in active disobedience. So instead, he just chooses avoidance. So he leaves. So remember again, where does his father think he went? So the truth is, it's not clear. It's not abundantly clear. Did he think? Because you have to understand something. Remember, whenever Eliezer ben Hyrcanus was crying, what was his father's response, remember? What was his father's response? Right? Don't worry, I'll give you an easier piece of soil to till. Remember, that it seems to be from the story that Hyrcanus, the father of Eliezer, thought that maybe his son's quote-unquote desire to learn Torah wasn't actually a desire to learn Torah. What was it a desire to do? To avoid work. To avoid work. It happens sometimes. People hide behind learning. People hide behind Torah in order to avoid having to make other choices in life. Unfortunately, it happens. So again, it almost appears from Eliezer, or excuse me, from Hyrcanus' perspective, that maybe he thought Eliezer was just saying, "Oh yeah, I want to go learn Torah by Yochanan ben Zakkai." But what he was really saying is, "I don't want to work in the fields." That's why, again, remember, Hyrcanus says, "Don't cry. I'll give you a softer piece of soil." So from Hyrcanus' perspective, and possible again from Eliezer's brothers, as we're going to see, it's possible that they thought Eliezer just ran away in order to avoid working. Yes? So no, it's interesting. His father did not come to get him. You can see this from, you're going to see this from the story in just a moment. He ran away from home, and Hyrcanus makes, I shouldn't say, it doesn't appear from the story that Hyrcanus made any attempt to find his son. Just like, by the way, who else doesn't make an attempt? It doesn't appear that Eliezer made an attempt to contact his father. Right? This is part of the... Hold on. We're going to get to that in just a second. Hold on to that. So right now, so just pointing out, as far as in Hyrcanus' mind, Eliezer ran away from home. Did he run away to learn, or did he run away to sit on a beach somewhere? Whatever he ran away is, he ran away to escape the responsibilities of home life, and that's in Eliezer's mind. So Eliezer's brothers feel the same way. They say to their father, "Dad, it's not right. Eliezer is written in your will, which means that when you die, he is going to inherit a portion of the estate. But why should he inherit anything? At the end of the day, he shirked his responsibility. He ran away from home. The fact that he's not here, it's more work for us. You should cut him out of your estate. You should cut him out of your will." Hyrcanus says to his sons, "You know what? You're right. So what do they do? Listen to this story. So paragraph test. Halach Hyrcanus lahadir es bino min chasav eitzel nasi hasanhedrin halohu Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So watch this story. So Hyrcanus says, you're right, but it's not enough to write him out of the will. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a neder. I'm going to make a vow. And what's the vow? That my son Eliezer should be able to derive no benefit from my estate. And he wanted to make a specific type of vow, a public vow, which is irrevocable. So what's the best place to make a public vow? Best place? Sanhedrin. Where is the Sanhedrin located? Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim. And who happens to preside over the Sanhedrin at this point in time? None other than Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Hyrcanus decides, he says to the family, we are going to Yerushalayim, we're going to the Sanhedrin, I'm making an appointment with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I'm going to make a public vow that prohibits my son Eliezer from getting any benefit from my estate. That'll show him. He ran away. He left us high and dry. Yes.
What's the difference between a neder and a will?
So the difference is a will can be changed. In general, a neder that's taken in a public setting usually is irrevocable. So meaning, he doesn't just want to write Eliezer out of his will. He wants to forever remove Eliezer from the family. Because he's upset. He's upset because, remember, again, from Hyrcanus' perspective, to defend Hyrcanus for just a moment, not that this is really so defensible that a parent would do this to a child, but again, from his perspective, where did he go? I haven't heard from him in who knows how many years. Is he learning? Is he working? Is he alive? Is he not alive? Does he have a family? Like what's happening with him? So from Hyrcanus' perspective, my son essentially ran away from home, didn't tell us what was going on. We haven't heard from him. He's dead to us. So if he's dead to us, why should he have a share in the estate? So watch this. Middle of paragraph test. Be'egil beis hanasi. So you have to imagine this scene. So Hyrcanus shows up in the home of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So matza atzmo shutof lekino shakol gedol Yisrael. Be'vesa shal Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So apparently he made an appointment with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He walks into Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's home. So remember again, who's in the home of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? So the Gedol Hador, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the Gedol Hador. So everybody was in his home, right? The great rabbinic leaders, the great political leaders, the military, everyone is there. So Hyrcanus takes his seat in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's house. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shama al bo'o. So listen to this. V'nosan lo shivo ben shloshes ashira Yerushalayim. Shayu ba'osa maimad, nakdim ben Gurion, ben tzitzis hakesef, v'kalba savua. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai hears that Hyrcanus has come to town. Now he also understands that obviously he's not there for a social visit. He must be there related something to Eliezer, and it's probably not good. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai does something amazing. First of all, he gives Hyrcanus a very bakavadik, a very prominent seat. Where does he seat him? Amongst the three wealthiest men of Yerushalayim. Nakdimon ben Gurion, ben Tzitzis Akezes, and Kalba Savua. Remember again, these names sound familiar, right? Where do we know these names from? Choron Bayesheni. Excellent. Remember again, these were the three wealthy individuals. Remember, there was a big machlokes. This is a little bit later on in history, or a little bit later on after this. A big machlokes within Klal Yisrael, there was a Roman siege. So what should we do? Should we fight the Romans, or should we engage in diplomacy? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and all of the rabbinic leaders of the generation said, we can't go to war. They're stronger than us. We must engage in diplomacy. There was another school of thought. I don't remember what were their names? The Bar Yonim. Excellent. The Bar Yonim wanted armed conflict. Let's fight the Romans. So the Rabbanim had the support of the three wealthiest men of Yerushalayim. Nakdim ben Gurion, ben Tzitzis Hakeses, Kalba Savua. And they said, between us, we have enough collective wealth to sustain the residents of Yerushalayim for over 20 years. Which means you have 20 years to work this out with the Romans. That is a lot of time for diplomacy. What did the Bar Yonim do? They burnt down the storehouses. Right? They burnt down the storehouses of wheat, of oil, of wood, thereby plunging Yerushalayim into immediate famine. Remember, this is the whole story. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is smuggled out. He fakes his own death. So remember, this is a number of years earlier. So I just want to point out, you know, their names are not their real names. Right? Those names, think about this. What does Kalba Savua mean? A satisfied dog. Not amongst the most popular baby names, right? That wasn't his name, right? These names are descriptive, right? Kalba Savua was such a great Baal Tzedaka that even if the poorest person came to him hungry like a dog, he would make sure to give them enough food to be satiated. Nakdimon ben Gurion, that's reference the Gemara says to the story where the sun stood still for Nakdimon. It pierced the heavens. Ben Tzitzis Akeses was so wealthy that he never walked on the ground. His tzitzis would drag against cushions of silk. So these were descriptive names. So you can imagine Eliezer comes to see Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and where is he seated? Where is he seated? He's seated amongst the wealthiest men in Yerushalayim. Amongst the wealthiest men in Yerushalayim. So already, again, So Hyrcanus, maybe Hyrcanus was a comfortable landowner, but he was certainly did not travel in the same circles as these guys. That is for sure. So what happens? He says, end the paragraph, test, Hayayoshev Beinehem Umirases. So interestingly enough, so Hyrcanus is sitting there and he's shaking. Why is he shaking? He feels intimidated. I'm sitting amongst the wealthiest men of Yerushalayim. By the way, it wasn't just the wealthiest men of Yerushalayim. These were the wealthiest men in Eretz Yisrael. So Hyrcanus is wondering, why am I being seated over here amongst these men? Watch this, paragraph Yud. Ben Kovako, Pan Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Rabbi Eliezer. Now, remember again. So at this point in time, young Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, has become the Talmud Mufok, the primary disciple, one of the primary disciples of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Eliezer has no idea that his father is there. He has no idea that his father is present in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's home. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai turns to Rabbi Eliezer and he says, you know what? Pasach v'tziv alav pasach v'drush. He says, Eliezer, you've been in the yeshiva now for a number of years. It's time for you to give your first public shir. First public shir. Amar lo ein yachal liftoach. So Eliezer's Rabbi, I can't. I'm not holding there yet. I'm still a young Talmud. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. It's not right. I'm not ready yet to be able to give a shir. So what happens? Dachat boharav v'dachra bochaver. So first of all, what a beautiful scene. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai encourages him. Dachak bo means he pushed him, he encouraged him. His chaverim, his friends, encouraged him. What is this scene? What does this piece seem to stand in such stark contrast to? His father. Right? Isn't it incredible? His own father told him he couldn't. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who becomes his spiritual father, right, tells him he can. His own brothers probably told him he couldn't. His spiritual brothers, his chaverim in the Beis Medrash, tell them that he can. At she'amad, listen to this. At she'amad upasach bidvarim shelo shamaton ozen me'olam. Eliezer ben Hyrcanus gives a shir. And not only does he give a shir, but he says words of Torah that no one ever heard before in this world. Whether that means he advanced chidushim, novel ideas, manners of explanation, but he gave a shir like no one in this world has ever heard. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus' first shir, given in the home of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and filled with words of Torah that the world had simply never heard before. Kol davar v'davar she'yatzeh mipiv, every single word that young Eliezer said, Amad Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai araglov v'nashko al rosho. Every word that Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus said, you can imagine the scene. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gets up and he kisses Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus on his head. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is so proud of his Talmud, like a father should be proud of a child. Look, can you imagine the scene? The Gadol Hadar. So now you have Eliezer ben Hyrcanus giving a shir, and every single thing that he says, the Gadol Hadar gets up and gives him a kiss on his head. Gives him a kiss, such approbation. So if you turn the page, paragraph Yud Aleph. La'achar shesim ha'benes tivaro. So remember again. So now, remember, who's in the audience? Who's in the audience who hears the entire share? His father. See, so can you imagine what's happening over here? So his father, Hyrcanus, comes to Yerushalayim thinking that his son is an abysmal failure. My son is a failure. Not only is he a failure, but he's a no good Nick. Right? He ran away from home. He left us high and dry. We have to tend to the farm all by ourselves. He's a nothing. So he's coming to Yerushalayim with the express purpose of writing his son out of his estate. Meanwhile, what happens when he shows up in Yerushalayim? He finds his son. His son is giving this dramatic shir. The Gadol Hadar turns out to be his son's Rebbe. And every single word that comes out of my son's mouth, the Gadol Hadar of Yochanan ben Zakkai gets up and kisses him on his head. Paragraph Yud Aleph. La'acher shesiim haben es dvarov. After Eliezer finished the shir, come Hyrcanus aviv v'hoda. Hyrcanus stands up and he makes the following declaration. Rabosai, ani lo basi lekan elo kidei lahadir es Eliezer bini menechasai. So listen to the announcement that Hyrcanus makes. He says, Rabosai, I have come here to Yerushalayim in order to go ahead and write my son out of my estate. I have come here in order to make a vow prohibiting my child, my son, from getting any benefit from my estate. Achshav kol nechasai yunistunu le'Eliezer bini. But now, I hereby make the declaration that all of my property should be given over to Eliezer, my son. In an incredible turn of events, Hyrcanus says, I came here to write my son out of the will, to deprive him of every little bit of material wealth that belonged to me, and I hereby stand ready to give everything now to my son Eliezer. So Eliezer's response is fascinating. Paragraph Yud Beis. Hishivu Rabbi Eliezer, im chafetz ani bekarkos, father, if it's land that I want, lahashem ha'aretz umlo'o, if it's land that I want, all the real estate in the world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Im b'kesef ezav chashka nafshi, and if it's gold and silver that I want, liya kesef liya zav, no mashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the gold and the silver belongs to me anyway. Ela b'tora bilvad chashka nafshi. Rather, Father, the only thing I want and the only thing I really ever wanted was the ability to immerse myself and to actualize my greatness in the world of Torah. And the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh comments on the end of this story, and he says there's an incredibly tragic postscript. What was Eliezer really saying to his father? What was he really saying? You know, Dad, you never understood me, and you still don't understand me. You think I want your estate? You think I want my brothers to be deprived of? Is that what you think that I want? I never wanted that. I never wanted that. All I wanted was the ability to pursue my dreams. All I wanted was the ability and your support to become the best version of myself. All I ever wanted was for you to tell me that I could be whatever I put my mind to. In my heart and my soul, I knew that I could become a great Talmud Chacham. And not just a great Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus was one of the Gidolei Hadar, one of the leading rabbinic minds of his generation. I knew, Eliezer ben Hyrcanus said, I knew that I felt this in myself, that I could become something great. And Father, all I ever wanted was your unconditional love and support. All I ever wanted is when I came to you and said, Dad, I want to go learn Torah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in Yerushalayim, because I felt like I could become someone great. All I ever wanted was for you to say, go for it. I didn't need your money. I appreciate your money, but that's not what I was after. I'm not after your wealth. All I wanted was your love. All I wanted was your support. All I wanted was your belief in me. That's all I really ever wanted. I just wanted you to believe in me. So that would give me the koach to believe in myself. But you still don't get it. You keep your money. I don't need the money, especially if it's going to go at the expense of my brothers. I just needed your love. I needed your support. I needed your commitment. Now, did Hyrcanus say something back to his son or not? Who knows? That's where the Medrash ends. That's where the story ends. I would hope that maybe Hyrcanus reconciled with his son at some point in time. I would hope. But the Medrash doesn't tell us this. But what? Yes. Not so respectful, that what?
Not so respectful. Like, I mean, I'm not judging Eliezer.
So look, I think he could have said, remember, what I want to point out is, if you look at what he says to his father, Father, it's okay. If I want land, it belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I want gold and silver, it belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All I want is Torah. That's what he said. And I think if you look at that, there's nothing disrespectful. The Baal Shem Tov is saying, you know, in life, there's what a person says, and there's what they mean. So what did Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, what did he mean? What he meant, and I don't think this was disrespectful to his father. I think he was saying to his father is, Dad, I love you. You're wonderful. But I think you still don't really understand me. I was never after your wealth. All I was after was your approval. What does every single child want from their parent? I want to know that my parent loves me, that my parent is proud of me, and that my parent is supportive of me. You know, this is Merit Hashem. One day you'll be parents, you'll be mothers. You'll realize this is the most important thing. Children, being a good parent doesn't mean buying your kid all everything they want. Actually, that's usually being a bad parent, buying your kid every single thing that they want. Right? And it doesn't mean going in and spoiling your child. Being a good parent means being loving, being attentive, and being supportive. And essentially what Eliezer was saying to his father, albeit in a very respectful way, is you weren't that for me. Maybe you were that for my other brothers. Maybe you were. But you weren't that for me. And I think it's, and I'm sure Eliezer Ben Hurkan has said it in a respectful way. I'm sure he said it. And again, remember, what he said, you saw in the Medrash. And what he said is a totally beautiful and spiritual statement. But what he meant was, it's heartbreaking that after all these years, again, we don't know how many years elapsed from the time that Eliezer left home until this encounter. But it is a tragic family story that here, after being apart so many years, you think that what you could do is to make me happy is to give me your estate. Just tell me you're proud of me. Just tell me you're proud of me. Just tell me you love me. Just ask me what you could do to help facilitate my journey. And by the way, in Hyrcanus's defense, he was trying to do that. He just expressed it the wrong way. You know, there are some people like this in life who don't know how to express themselves emotionally. So they express themselves, materially. Right? They express themselves materially. So some people in life, they don't know how to say, I love you. They can't, for whatever the reason, people are wired differently. They can't say those words. They choose not to. They choose not to say those words. Or they choose not to be warm or emotive or loving. So they choose to express their love in material ways. So if you have a relationship like that, you have to at least appreciate that the person is trying. But anyone who has a relationship like that will be the first to tell you, I would give up all of the material gifts for a feeling of love, for a feeling of support, for a feeling of empathy. And that's so tragically what's happening over here. Hyrcanus means well, right? What Hyrcanus is really saying, albeit in a different kind of way, is I love you and I'm so proud of you. That's what he's saying. Just the way he's choosing to express that is giving all of his property to his son, not realizing, by the way, that he's hurting his other children, right? Because remember, again, he's hurting all the other brothers. He's trying to express his love. And Eliezer Ben Hyrcanus is saying, no, I don't need that. Just tell me you love me. Just say the words. Just say you're proud of me. Just say you support me. Just say you're happy with the decisions I've made in life. And that's it. I don't need anything else. But remember again, why is all of this important? Why did I tell you this whole story of Eliezer Ben Hyrcanus, which is a dramatic story? Why am I sharing it with you? Because there is an opinion that Eliezer Ben Hyrcanus is the author of Perek Shira. And now remember, what is the entire essence of Perek Shira? I know that's hard to ask you because we haven't learned it yet. But as we go through Perek Shira, you're going to see that the entire essence of Perek Shira is something we said before. There is more to nature than meets the eye. What you see on the surface is not the totality of what there is. What you see on the surface is often a superficial understanding, superficial dynamic. But delve a little bit deeper and you will discover many layers of profundity. Who's an incredible example of that? Eliezer Ben Hyrcanus. Because when you looked at Eliezer Ben Hyrcanus, again, at least what did his father see? What did Eliezer Ben Hyrcanus' father see when he looked at him? Not now, not at the end of the story, the beginning of the story. What did he see?
Not nothing.
What did he see? A farmer. You're a good farmer. You'll be a good farmer, a good agrarian. That's what he saw. Did he see any potential beyond that? Unequivocally, no. He saw nothing in his son that he felt was any greater than a farmhand. And it's great to be a good farmer. The world needs good farmers. That's all Hyrcanus was able to imagine in his son. And Eliezer grew up with that pain because there is nothing more painful in this world than having a parent who thinks that you're just ordinary. Having a parent who just thinks that you're regular. Having a parent who thinks that, I don't see anything spectacular or great or special or super in you. You're just a regular girl, a regular boy. That's the worst. It's a failure in parenting. It's not a failure in the child. It's a failure in the parent. So Eliezer Ben Hyrcanus goes on to write Perek Shira. And the entire essence of Perek Shira is, when you look at nature, you think you see everything. But let me show you all the deeper levels. Because Eliezer Ben Hyrcanus says, I know what it's like to be looked at as ordinary, even though you have so many layers of profundity attached to you. And I just want to point out, I want to go back for just a moment, because remember again, according to the other opinion, who was the author of Perak Shira? David HaMelech. I meant to mention this before, but I forgot to. If you remember again, from your studies, your vast studies in Navi, when the Navi describes David HaMelech, it describes him with two qualities. What are the two qualities? So good, that's how he describes himself also. How does the Navi describe him? Number one? Admoni, excellent, ruddy complexion, reddish complexion. How else does it describe him? Who said that? Go, what was it?
Beautiful eyes.
Beautiful eyes. Yefe inayim. Now, this is very dramatic because in Tanakh, men are never described by their eyes. The only other time we have a reference to someone's eyes is where? Leah. Now I want to tell you something amazing. I'm proud of you. I'm going to have to give you, I owe you these sources because you should not take my word for it. It's important to see the Maran Makomos, but you'll take my word for it for this class. The Torah describes, how does the Torah describe Leah Imenu? Einei Leah Rakos. So again, how do you, what does it mean, Einei Leah Rakos? That Leah's eyes were soft? Good. So all of us are familiar with the approach of Rashi. Right? And it's not just Rashi. Rashi is quoting the Medrash, actually quoting the Gemara. That Einei Leah Rakos means Leah's eyes were soft. Soft, Rashi understands, to really mean what? Right. So what does soft mean? What is soft? Puffy. Puffy. That's why were Leah's eyes puffy? Because, you know, after you cry, what happens? Generally happens to your eyes? They get puffy and red. So again, we know the Medrash. We know the Gemara. Leah's eyes were red. Why? Because again, everyone used to say that Laban has two daughters. Leah has two sons, and therefore they're going to get paired off with each other. The older daughter of Laban will marry the older son of Rivka, and so on and so forth. So therefore, again, Leah, from the time that she was a little girl, always heard that who was her Basher? Who was she going to marry? Esav. Girls, you'll go back. You could do this over Yom Tov, Emir Tzashem. You'll take a look. You'll open up your Mikros Gedolos on that pasuk. And you will see that almost every other Mefarish disagrees with Rashi. Disagrees with Rashi. The Radak, the Chizkuni, the Ibn Ezra. And they say, Eina Leah Rakos means Leah had exquisite eyes. The Leah man had beautiful eyes. She had beautiful eyes. She had beautiful eyes. And in fact, the Torah is creating a contrast. Rachel Imenu was a beautiful woman. However it's describing that, whether that's describing her physical appearance, her features, she was a very beautiful woman. But Leah Imenu possessed a level of exquisite beauty that her younger sister did not possess. What did Leah have that Rachel didn't have? Her eyes were beautiful. Einei Leah Rakos. Her eyes were beautiful. And in fact, you find in the certain Hasidic literature, you ever hear the expression, the eyes are the window to the soul? So like everything good in this world, it came from us. Right? Meaning, where does that concept that the eyes are the window to the soul, that comes from Leah Imenu? That the Mefarshim point out that when you looked at Leah's eyes, you saw that there was just something special to this woman. That there were just many deeper layers of profundity. And by the way, that bears out to be true. Leah Imenu, you know, it's interesting because obviously in the story of Rachel and Leah, so very often, who does our heart go out to more in the story? Rachel. Right? More often than not, I think it's Rachel because again, Rachel's the one who gives up her husband, right? And has to wait another 7 years. She struggles with infertility, only ends up having two sons. But if you think about who had greater strength, I know it's not a fair question, but would not judge. It appears that it's Leah, right? Leah is in a marriage where she knows that her husband did not choose to marry her. She and that's heartbreaking. That's overwhelming. Leah is the mother of six of the Shvatim, right? Leah is the mother of Malchus of Yehuda. Leah is the mother ultimately again of Levi. That's not by accident. That's not by accident that those children, so spiritual leadership, political leadership, all come from Leah Imenu, which tells us that Leah Imenu possesses an incredible degree of strength. You couldn't necessarily see it on the surface, but when you look into her eyes, you would see many layers of profundity. Mashiach comes from Leah. This is incredibly important. Mashiach, although it's true, Mashiach ben Yosef, of course, comes from Rachel, but Mashiach, the Mashiach, who will bring the Geula, who will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, comes from Leah Imenu. David HaMelech comes from Leah Imenu. So fast forward a couple of generations. When the Navi describes David HaMelech, how does it describe him? Yefeh Einayim. He has beautiful eyes. Now it's very strange. Again, like I said, you'll look it up. No other time in Tanakh do you find a man described by his eyes. Eyes in Tanakh are not usually used to describe men. Yes. Oh, that could be. I don't think the Navi describes him with that quality. That's it. That Tzidkio had also had eyes. Which again, who is Tzidkio?
Oh,
right. The Gemara, that's true. The Gemara that talks about people who are able to see Misofa Olamat Sofa. Excellent, right. That's an excellent point. Let me be more specific. I mean, in Tanakh, to see someone described, the Psukim actually describe someone with a quality. By the way, at least Tzidkio is a descendant of David HaMelech also, which is interesting. It's all the same Mishpacha. I don't know. You'd have to look up the other people if they're all descendants of Leah Imenu. I don't know. Take a look. So I'm just pointing out over here, it's not an accident that the Navi describes David as having beautiful eyes. Because at the end of the day, remember, let's take a step back. I apologize that I didn't do this with you. What was David HaMelech's home life like? Not great. That's a huge understatement, right? Not great. Understand. And you remember the story. Remember the story when Shmuel, right? Shaul is done because of the whole episode that happened with Amalek. He's still alive, but he's no longer is fit to be king. So remember again, Hashem Baruch Hu dispatches Shmuel to the house of Yishai, and so remember David said, sorry, Shmuel says to Yishai, assemble all of your sons. Okay, so Yishai assembles all of his sons. And remember, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Shmuel, one of the sons of Yishai is going to be the king, next king. So Shmuel goes through, waits, because he hears the voice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, not this one, 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 not this one. Goes through all the sons. Shmuel says, what's going on? He says to Yishai, do you have any more sons? What was Yishai's response? No. Shmuel says, are you sure you don't have any more sons? To which Yishai says, oh yeah, there's another one, but he's a shepherd boy, he's out. Shmuel says, bring him in. And of course, that oh yeah child, the forgotten son, the one who wasn't even reckoned by his father as one of the regular sons, was David. You see incredible parallelism between the story of Eliezer ben Hyrcanus and David HaMelech. What did it mean to grow up in a home like that? What does it mean to grow up in a home where you are the oh yeah child? When your father is asked to assemble all of his sons, it doesn't even dawn on him to call you in from the field. It doesn't even dawn on him. And by the way, David HaMelech's family problems don't end there. Right? Remember again, he has a meteoric rise because of what happens with Goliath. He kills Goliath, he becomes general in Shaul's army. But then remember again what happens. Shaul turns on David very quickly. Very quickly, and is ready to kill David. So now he's got a father who marginalized him. Remember again, I was talking about how his brothers treated him, right? His brothers mistreated him very badly as well. A father-in-law who's now ready to kill him. Fast forward a little bit, right? Remember again, now David becomes king. There's the episode with Bathsheba. As a result of the episode of Bathsheba, is going to be a rebellion. What happens with the rebellion? Avshalom, his own son is ready to kill him. Remember, David won't lift a hand against Avshalom. He will not. And he orders his generals not to do so as well. But Avshalom will have no problem killing his father if his father falls into his... So David HaMelech, from the time that he was young, knows what it means to be marginalized by family. And what it means to grow up like that. Remember again, and here's what's amazing. Why does David HaMelech go out to war against Goliath? Remember again, remember the story. How does he even meet Goliath? How does he meet him, so to speak? What? Why was he even on the battlefront? Of his brothers. Remember, and why is he there? To bring them stuff. He's there like to bring them food. He's not a warrior, and he doesn't profess to be a warrior. He's there to bring his brother's stuff. He's the little annoying brother who shows up, they get the stuff, go home. While he's there, what does he hear? He hears Goliath taunting the Jewish people. And he says to, what does David say to himself? I can do this. It sounds a lot like whose story? Like Eliezer ben Hyrcanus sitting in the field saying to himself, you know what? I can be something in Torah. And meanwhile, again, when he first says it to his brothers, what do his brothers say? Get out of here. Go home. You're annoying. Right? As older siblings often say to younger siblings, stop it. Go home. Go back to dad. Just get out of here already. They marginalize, they minimize him. Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, I want to go and I want to learn Torah. Stop it. You're a farmhand. That's what you do. So isn't it incredible that the authors of Perek Shira, whether it's David HaMelech or whether it is Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, it's the same life story. It's two men who were made to feel like nothing. But believed that they had the ability to be something. You know, it was very important. Most people who are made to feel like nothing, what do they amount to? Nothing. Because Klal Gadol life is most people who are put down, stay down. If enough people tell you enough of the time that you are a nothing, most times, most people just give in to that. They just give in. Look, if everybody says I'm a nothing, I'm a nothing. Most people who are made to feel like a nothing remain a nothing. David HaMelech, Eliezer ben Hyrcanus were incredibly unique because they were made to feel like nothing, yet they believed in their heart that they could be something. And even when everyone around them told them, you're a nothing, they believed in themselves enough to say, no, I can be a something. David HaMelech goes on to become David Melech Yisrael. Ne'im Zimiros Yisrael, the composer of Sefer Tehillim, and according to at least one opinion, the composer of Perek Shira, the father of a dynastic monarchy, the father of Mashiach, the father of tshuva, right? This, David HaMelech teaches us the ability to do tshuva even for whatever it might be in life. That's David HaMelech, because he believed in himself. Eliezer ben Hyrcanus could have easily just disappeared into the sands of time as just another farmer, but decides to push himself and becomes the Bar Sud She'enu Ma'amitipa, the right hand man of his Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who helped to save Klal Yisrael in the aftermath of Chorban Sheni. And these men, one of them, writes Perek Shira. Because what's the message of Perek Shira? The ultimate message of Perek Shira? There's always more than meets the eye. When you look at nature, you see one thing. Perek Shira is going to sensitize us and to teach us about the profound, multiple, deeper layers of nature. How what you see is not what you get. And of course, what's going to be the message? The message is that if nature has all of these deeper layers of profundity, then imagine the deeper layers that each of us possess as well. If the sun isn't just the sun, but it has all of these layers, if the sea isn't just the sea, but has all of this profundity, if the earth is not just the earth, but has all of these layers of deeper meaning, and those are inanimate, lifeless objects, then imagine the multiple layers of profundity, of life meaning, that are encapsulated inside of me. If there's more to nature than meets the eye, then there's so much more to each of us than meets the eye as well. All right, we're going to stop over here for today. We'll stop here. I don't believe there's no class on Monday. Some Gedalia? I don't think so. I think then Wednesday, Emirat Hashem, we have a Yom Yun. Emirat Hashem, so I take the opportunity to wish all of you a Ksiva v'chassim Tov. It should be a beautiful year filled with health, with mazel. Kol mishalos libchen letov en bracha at shivla sifsoseichen milom ardai. And Emirat Hashem, it should be a beautiful year of success, of hatzlacha, and halavai geula for all of us and for all of Klal Yisrael.